Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 253. The band is kind of back together again. One of us is back together. So joining me this week, as he always does, is Clay Snare. Yeah, exactly. I just completely fucking blew it with John being gone. I thought John was gonna be gone before he was, basically. But scheduling goofs happen. The audience only missed one show, and you've been in Dallas. I have never been in Dallas. It's one of the few major cities I've not been in, and I really am okay with that.
Traffic was insane. My interview was like maybe 10 minutes away normally from my hotel.
Right.
And I left during like 3 o'clock traffic to get there, which was a bad idea. And it took me like half an hour.
Now, do you do a lot of walking / public transportation in Louisiana?
Or... Oh, no. And New Orleans has no public transportation at all. Like, if you're riding the bus, you're either an insane asylum patient on escape or a convict on escape.
Yeah, see, I kind of thought maybe that was a West Coast, Northeast type thing.
Well, Dallas does have a rapid area transit system, so...
I just was not impressed with Texas. I'm sorry, Texas. I really am. You probably have some great people there. I think my time in the East taught me that, and not even really like, you know, living in hillbilly country like I do, that the West is where I belong. You know what I mean? It's just I liked a lot of what I saw on the East Coast and in the Southeast, but it's just I feel more at home here. And not, like I said, not just in, you know, the town I live in, but just in general. The cities are more my speed if you take out L.A. But no, Dallas is what I've never been in. I was trying to think if I've even been laid over there on a flight. I don't think so. I only took the southern route once. And I think that was straight from Nashville to LAX and then fly up the state, which is always so hilarious. Great. Get to go to fucking LA for 10 minutes and then fly an hour to my final destination. You bastards. Couldn't you have coasted on fumes? Can we glide or something? Well, it feels more like a well-rounded flight. Like if you leave, where do I usually fly out of? Birmingham, because Montgomery was way more expensive. If I left Birmingham, my layover would be, or change planes would be in Chicago, and then from Chicago to Sacramento, where I'd then either get picked up or rent a car or whatever. That felt more like a well-rounded flight, especially as a taller person. Whereas you're crammed in a plane from Nashville to fucking L.A., it's like, Jesus Christ. This is bad. But then you had adventures in Oklahoma. We've heard about that before.
Yeah, I did a lot of driving, so because I visited my brother too, in a College Station. So overall, I did about 1,800 miles.
See, is he an Aggie?
Yeah, he is. Yep, he just got his ring this year.
Ooh.
Big deal. Yeah.
Every year I get older, I wonder about things like I see people getting excited for college graduation and various social media stuff, you know, or people reposting pictures. I probably don't know too many people that young. Obviously, I know you. But I just, it was a means to an end to me, college.
Maybe
I made a mistake there. Maybe I did. Obviously, might have been more of a means to an end to you, because I spent my fair share of time partying, but that was not a school activity. That was in a cheap dive on Friday nights. You know, that's a little different. Although the college I went to had a bar on campus, technically. It was on property the school owned and has a 99-year lease that I think probably still has about 90 years on it. So they're not getting rid of it anytime soon.
Hey, that was an interesting town to visit, College Station. I mean, they really hate UT down there.
Yes.
And I did not see a single orange thing.
So yeah, it's
they probably don't even sell oranges in the grocery store. That's how crazy it is.
It's very much like Alabama and Auburn.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
What blew my mind, and I kind of already knew it because I like college football, or I like it well enough to know the rivalries like UT and A&M and stuff like
Well, they're
that.
not even in the same conference anymore, so I
No,
don't
I
even
know.
understand like what it's all about, really.
Which one went to SEC? Was it
A&M did.
A&M went to SEC, and then yeah, and then UT stayed in the same. But what I didn't know was Alabama has like three other universities. Like good state schools. Not top of the line, but good state schools. Fuck if I knew they existed. Because like you land at Birmingham, or you drive across the state line, and they make you fill out a form. Who are you pulling for, Auburn or Alabama? And it's like, can I check undecided? I'm from a part of the country where football's not a big deal. Even that blew some people's minds in any part of the South I was in, whether it was Georgia. Actually, one time I was actually in Texas for a day or two. What? You don't have a big college football team? No. Nope. My university did not. Had a damn good baseball team that's produced major league players. Fuck baseball. That was pretty much the answer across the board. It's like, okay. But I gotta say, I worked for Auburn University for almost 2 years, and so I still keep up with what they're doing and hope they do well in football every year. So, I mean, I guess the infection spreads a little bit. But yeah, I didn't know your brother was going to A&M. I've got some friends that graduated from A&M. It's a good school. So,
Oh yeah, it's good. He likes it. He's in engineering, so
oh, it's
he's
damn good school for engineering. Hell yeah.
The building that he's in was donated by Stephen Hawking. So they're
So
pretty well off over there.
it always makes me laugh because I've been to a number of college campuses, and you would think that they would just shuffle stuff so it was appropriate. Like Stephen Hawking is a theoretical physicist. He doesn't exactly build bridges. But from the way it's been explained to me, especially having worked for a pretty major university, is they don't get to choose which building it goes on, which I always thought was stupid. Maybe you
Well,
shuffle.
I should say it is the physics building. He's double majoring.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. But I've seen plenty where it's not, where it's like it's
But
like a,
just some random, like, why is, I don't know.
it's
What's
like
a random profession?
art history brought to you by Dow Chemical. It's like,
Yeah, exactly.
what the fuck was that? Humanities brought to you by the Catholic Church. Okay, that one might have went a little too far, but I had to do it. But yeah, I was thinking about that the other day because I got some shit from a friend of mine for being a little too hard on LA because I think it's a pit. And I told him, I said, dude, it's in the top 10 of cities of my list of cities. And then, like, under my breath, I mumbled if we're talking about just inside the United But the funny thing is I grew up with this concept that LA has the worst traffic. It's not true. Dallas, Austin, Texas, and Atlanta, I think, from what I've heard and what I've experienced myself, probably have worse traffic than LA ever thought about.
Yeah, I think LA is number two to Dallas Fort Worth commute, which I looked that up. I was like, oh, I could commute from Fort Worth. And then, like, it's not that far away. I looked it up and it was like, 4 hour commute. And I'm like, let's not do that. So.
Well, one of the things I like is like 10 years ago, you wouldn't even have been applying for a job in Dallas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think that there's kind of this kerfuffle in YouTube of why are all these famous YouTubers in LA, like how is Hollywood trying to take over, and yeah, maybe there's something to that. But I mean, if you've got a high speed internet connection available, you could do almost any tech work anywhere. So you don't have to come out here to the West Coast. Obviously, as somebody who's in the bag for the West Coast, I'd say, "Oh, come out here. It's so much better." No, it's not. We're supposedly going to run out of water in 6 months, and cows are drinking the oceans dry. And what was the other one I heard the other day?
Oil spill.
Oh yeah, forgot about that. Oh shit.
Welcome to the club.
My thought was, well, here's what you do. You just suck all that up into a big tank, run it through a waste treatment facility and tell people you want water to water your lawns here. You fucking go. Problem solved. Because that's, I mean, honestly, that's the biggest thing that stresses me out right now, even though this is like our most busy time of the year between the ranch and other stuff I do, is when people look to me for an opinion on stuff like this drought, and their information is so out of whack, it don't matter which side they got it from, the pro-agricultural or the anti-agricultural, that there's no way for me to even begin. So I've just become this person that just goes, I'm not talking about it. You believe whatever you want to believe and just leave me the fuck alone. You know, because both sides are lying out their ass to do whatever they think they need to do. And eventually Mother Nature is going to decide whether she's going to take pity on us and it'll quit or it won't. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather talk about an oil spill, be quite honest. But no, I as much as I'm not a hipster, I'm more of a hillbilly, I'm loud, I'm brash, I'm all that bullshit. I my two favorite cities are Seattle and San Francisco. Just because they're so laid back. You know?
Right. Seattle's up there for me, too. I think that's number one for me, really.
I have a lot of fond memories in San Francisco. I think it's why it still ties. But Seattle is the only city where I've moved around in it, both with my own vehicle and public transportation, and never really felt stressed. Even during rush hour. Like, I drove in the last time I went there, which was like 2009, 2010, something like that. I hit town at about rush hour and was just gritting my teeth because I'd been in rush hour in San Francisco and LA. And, like, everybody does the speed limit. And you put on your blinker and people let you in. It's like, fuck me. And I have a California license plate. We're all assholes, so usually it's the opposite. Like, if you're in Oregon, they're going to run you off the road. Oh, them goddamn Californians moving in. But, all right, let's get this back to gaming. It's pretty funny. Did you get a chance to listen to anything that Kay and I did talking about mods and all that, or have you just been too busy?
No, not yet.
Okay. We basically rehashed it, but he had some interesting takes given that he's in the industry. You know, he basically talked about how having mods on your resume really, or CV if you're in Europe, really helps you, you know, really helps you get your foot in the door anymore. Obviously, they want industry experience, but even, you know, the bean counters and morons at the top of the studios are starting to understand that that might not always be the case. But what I found so ironic, and I guess in a way, maybe ironic's not the right word, I'm not sure, but the, as soon as we were done recording and this and that, he and I had been talking about Skyrim mods, and so I went and started playing Skyrim again, and shot another video on modded Minecraft. There's literally a segment in my latest Minecraft video where I say, this is why paid mods will never fucking work. Which I don't completely believe, but I was pretty frustrated and pissed off right at that moment. Because it's just, you can have this point of view in the theoretical, and then you go play a modded game, and it's like, there's one Skyrim mod I'm using right now. To get it working, I needed four mods total, made by four different people. How do you sell that?
That just sounds awful.
Well, it's not bad, because it's all encapsulated in a piece of software called the Nexus that, like, you can just download them all and they all install and do their thing. And honestly, the way Nexus works is, like, it lists the mods you need, and usually with links. So it's not easy. You know, it's not easy peasy, but it's not, I've suffered through far worse. But Kay and I were talking, Kay and I just basically talked about the fact that, you know, you have to kind of have some patience, and you can't just go at this at 100 miles an hour. Otherwise, you know, you might think you're going to make some money, but all you're going to do is piss people off, which kind of ties into, I wanted to say that about the thing, because playing modded games again, it's a good thing I hadn't been doing that before we did the original show talking about it. I probably would have been a lot angrier, and it wouldn't have been fair. But You backed the ukulele Kickstarter, yes? Am I saying
Yes, I did.
That's
Yes,
the way I've heard everybody else say it.
I'm pretty sure it's ukulele. I mean, because I mean, banjo kazooie, musical instrument, is a banjo and a kazooie, so I assume this is a ukulele.
That's yeah.
Yeah.
You have that one that reached its funding goal and nothing flat, right? Kickstarter. You have Iggy, Japanese last name that I can't say, so I'm not even going to fucking try. Guy behind Castlevania, who's doing a spiritual successor to Castlevania. His Kickstarter reached funding in nothing flat. And, you know, so he's going to be able to create a game. What I'm seeing here, and some of this comes from some videos I watched this week and other people talking about it, which helped me put it into words, is A, AAA publishers had better look out, and B, maybe we won't have to lament the loss of studios we love anymore. You get what I'm going with here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is do you have that feeling at all after knowing you're going to get a Banjo-Kazooie-like game?
Oh, I totally do. I mean, when they first announced it, I was excited, but I mean, I was worried because, I mean, for the past 10 or so years, there have been no 3D platformers, and you guys have heard me talk about this over and over again. And so, I mean, of course, I was excited for this, and I'm like, I'm definitely going to back it, but I mean, is anyone else going to back it? You know, is it just going to be me and a few other weirdos that are obsessed with a bear that wears pants, you know? And then it went on and reached funding in 40 minutes, you know, and then it got 2 million euro, 2 million, 2 million pounds, and just is still going from there. And it's, I don't know, it sort of like verifies that like the genre isn't dead. And so, I mean, that can apply to any other genre really that people feel like is spiritually dead, but is actually not.
Well, it also means that maybe we shouldn't focus on studios going by the wayside. Because if I'm 100% blunt honest, I get tired of, oh, Rare's doing this, oh, Rare's not doing that. Because you know what? We can't change that. But now it seems like we have this avenue where devs that work for those companies can say, fuck this, I'm out of here, and go do something else.
Yeah, I mean, it's a more transparent way of showing what's going on and what's being made. I mean, I'm sure there's people that were at Rare before it went crazy that were like, okay, well, we got moved to Microsoft. We can still make an awesome game, you know, but then the higher ups who weren't totally associated with what the idea was, you know, changed it to what Rare is now. So, I mean, having this just being whatever the original development team was or whatever people want to work on, whatever game they want to work on, it sort of cuts that level of, I don't want to say bureaucracy because it's not that, but just, I guess, corporate structure. And so it makes it more pure, I think.
Well, I'm not sure about purity, because you still have the possibility of even a big name fucking up. In fact, we've covered a big name fucking
up. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Peter Molyneux. It's more of...
That's nothing new there, though.
Right, but that's... What happened should be an example independent of him. Meaning it could happen to Tim Schafer. Meaning it could happen to a group of guys from Rare. You know, everything has some inherent risk in it. Was Molyneux's example made more so by his gift for bullshit? Yes. But it's still something you have to take into account when you look at Kickstarter as a system. The other thing I think Kay and I touched on that I wanted to touch on with you is the biggest problem we have is finding a good way for people to know that these teams are out there and that these indie games are out there that suit their needs. Do you ever feel like when you're going through the Humble Bundle store or Steam these days that there's so much fluff to go
through?
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And knowing you as I do, I would suspect that that gets on your nerves, does it not?
Yeah, I don't really have a lot of patience. You know, I'm one of those people that when I go into GameStop, like, I don't browse. Like, it's just, I'm here to pick up this, this, and then I leave. You know, I don't. Oh, you know, let me pick this up and read the back of it, and let me go over here, you know. And so being online on an online store is just 50 times worse than that. You're like, I have no idea what this is. Like, I don't want to go watch Let's Play videos of this. I just want to play something. And, you know, I mean, the only reason why I know about this, that I knew about this Kickstarter before it started, was because I'm obsessed with, you know, this type of game. So, I mean, if it's something that I wasn't interested in before, then I would have totally gone browsed over it unless it got as big as this one did.
Right, and that's something I see as a problem that needs to be refined. I don't know if there's any way to do it though, because there are other platformers out there, maybe not 3D, but really good ones. And one of the things I'm thinking about doing from now on, since I'm more willing to dive headfirst into Steam and other places, is when I see something that appeals to you and John, bringing it up more. And that's not limited to just you and John. Because part of the issue with Kickstarter and so many people thinking they have good ideas, whether they have an industry name or not, is there's so much crap to go through. And I'm just talking about the gaming sector. You know, and I'm not saying the games are crap. I'm just saying there's something you wouldn't be interested in. So this new method of publishing is awesome, but there has to be some maturation, I think, to be able to get the good ideas out there.
Yeah, you don't want to turn into a Steam Greenlight sort of fiasco.
Well, the one nice thing about Greenlight is if you're smart, you just ignore that, especially since it hasn't really worked the way Valve intended, and you just browse what's came out of it in early access. I've had a couple of people contact me about looking at their game in Greenlight on Twitter, and I have, I think, I want to say there was like four of them, and of the four, I voted for two, and I did not vote for two. And I told them every single time whether I voted for it or not. And I'm not some important dude. I'm some dude that toils in obscurity that people see. Hey, he does games, talks about games occasionally. Maybe he'll like our game, or maybe he'll just vote for us. You know, and I don't know if any of them got out of Greenlight because none of them were ones I'd play like instantaneously. But the two I voted for were stuff I would have played when I had time. You know, they weren't exactly my main section of interest at the moment, but I just think we need to have some hope. I think it's the biggest thing to say that, you know, as bigger companies keep fucking up, EA, Konami, Ubisoft, Activision to a point, you know, that these guys come out on their own and see that Kickstarter or Indiegogo and some of the other funding sites give them the potential opportunity to make a game and not starve to death. You know. What there was one other thing I wanted to talk to you about with that, or ask you about with that.
Well, I mean, just to add to all this, I mean, this ukulele has to be really good, or else a lot of people are going to be totally not sold on backing another thing.
It has so much funding that it goes beyond your type of person.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So I think they're fairly safe with, I want to say, like a quarter. If it gives you at least the same feel as Banjo and Kazooie did with a few problems, you're going to probably forgive them if it's nothing major. They just have to get it good enough to convince those people that only play 3D platformers every once in a while. Or, you know, have plenty of other games to play so it's not a top priority. Because that's the other problem, too, if you think about it. It seems like for me, it's gotten worse. Because there's so many games out there and I play so many different genres. But I can't make time for half the shit that's coming out on PC. It's also probably not pushing me to get a console either, really, because I have so much stuff I want to play and want to do and want to make videos on or not make videos on or whatever I want to do that there are times where stuff's just going to get, you know, like I watched all the ukulele stuff, and it looks like I'd love to play it, but it's not a smart. It's not a smart use of my money because it's not something I'm gonna want to play right away. And I'm not a big
I totally get that.
well, and I'm not a big enough platformer fan that I'm gonna donate because I'm glad to see those guys making what they want to make.
Well, I guess a good question would be, what would get you to back a Kickstarter?
I have. I've backed a
Oh,
couple.
you. What have you backed?
I backed, oh shit, why can't I think of the name of it? Republic. Republic?
Oh, that's right. That's right. You told me about that.
Yeah. I haven't played it yet because all the episodes haven't come out. Which, that's really the only thing that they did not fall through. Damn it, I'm not spelling it right. Ah, here we go. There it is. Yeah, Camouflage Studios. But what little I played of it, I really, really liked. The other thing that was interesting about that, and you'll go through it too, is getting all the updates. I would
Oh yeah,
suspect.
I've been enjoying the ones that they've been sending so far.
I was just going to say, I would expect with a team of former AAA guys that they will send you a lot of updates. And I didn't really read every update, but I liked the way Camouflage packaged them.
Yeah, the
It
most
did.
recent one they sent like a little GIF of like testing the animations and stuff. So like not something to be like crazy useful or to anyone, but just nice little things to look at.
Well, what's important about these updates is to keep you understanding that they're still there. They're still working on stuff.
Yeah, things are still happening. Yeah.
Right. And so it can be very basic, and you're going to go, oh, hey, cool. They're still doing stuff. Here's a list of text of stuff they've worked on this time, in this time frame. The ones that go more elaborate, that's nice, but it also tells you that they, or it gives you a clue that they are passionate about it. Kickstarter for me, so far outside of Republic, there's really been nothing I just was so enamored with that I had to help them get there. Which is something I need to stop doing because there have been a few games that come out and I played on Steam that I'm like, shit, I really should have backed this. Maybe they could have got it done faster. Maybe I wouldn't have had to wait as long. Because honestly, I think most game Kickstarters I've seen, if you give 10 to 15 bucks, you're getting a free copy of the game if nothing else.
Yeah, that's how this one was.
Yeah, that's how most of them I've even browsed works. And again, that's not to say Kickstarter's perfect. It's far from perfect. If you don't feel comfortable spending your money in that way, then don't. But it's starting to mature now, and we're starting to see avenues for people who may not be able to make the games they want, industry vets come out and do it. Because my problem, Glace, is always with this whole, oh, evil corporation A bought studio B, is we don't ever hear both sides of the story, if you know what I mean. Like, there's no 100%, 1000% concrete evidence that Rare or Visceral or DICE or any of these companies got turned down a ton for stuff they want to do and got told you're going to work on this. And so I'm always leery of picking a side, but no matter what happens internally, if somebody's not happy, at least now they have another avenue to go down to make what they want to make. And seeing this, it makes me like right now, the biggest thought in my head seeing this ukulele and the Castlevania spiritual successor, so nobody gets in trouble for copyright.
What?
Which could be an avenue for the corporations to make a little money if they got smart and realized that they're never going to make a game of this, sell it to these dudes, get some of their funding. You know what I mean? I could see that becoming a thing, but it's pretty painfully obvious that Hideo Kojima is done at Konami. It's over. You want to lament that? There's going to be no Metal Gear Solids, no more this, no more that. That's fine, but guess what? And I think I said this in either the K episode or the last time we talked about Hideo. Dude, can you imagine what that motherfucker's gonna do with Kickstarter funding? The crazy ass shit he's gonna be able to do? Especially if he can bring a lot of his team with him.
Be Psycho Land.
I'll back it. I don't give a shit what it is. If it's just Fruit Ninja, the Fruit Ninja trailer. If it's just that, I'll back it.
Fair enough.
Well, I mean, because like now what I want to see, getting selfish about it, what I want to see is I want to see like guys at Infinity Ward who didn't leave that kind of want to go do their own thing. You know, guys at Bungie that may not be super happy with the direction they're going. The only downside I see to this, and I wonder if you've thought about this, is it's great and all that this is happening, but they're all still basically making the same fucking games they've made for years. That always concerns me a little bit. I mean, in the case of Yooka-Laylee, it's nice because there hasn't been a true good 3D platformer in years, but it's like, I always back you creators as being really, really, really awesome and always want to try new things, and I'm starting to believe that that's not the case in a lot of cases, you know? And Yooka-Laylee and the Symphony of Night, or the Castlevania spiritual successors, not giving me much evidence, or not giving me much to use to defend that against that notion. Which is fine, you know, people are going to get what they want, but I always spend way too much time thinking about what if so and so did this genre, or so and so did this genre, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, is it a pipe dream too? And again, I'm not saying that them doing the same genre they've always done is a bad thing, unless it's Cliffy. Yeah, an arena shooter, 2015. Good job, dude. Moron. Hey, I might be getting nicer as the years go on, but Cliffy's always going to be fair game. Especially when you like take this big hiatus to decide what you want to do next, and you come back with an arena shooter on Kickstarter. Come on, man. You just want to fuck off for 2 years. Which I don't blame. If I had his money, I would too. But don't give me the bullshit. But yeah, I'm really happy you're getting it. I kept an eye on it. Like when you first talked about it and said you backed it, I had the Kickstarter page open. And now it's easier for me to say this because I didn't have to do it. But I was going to keep watching it. And while I can't give a lot, if it was struggling or looking like it was going to be close, I was going to donate it. I was going to donate to it, or give them money just so you would get the game. And then somebody'd get my free copy. Actually, no, I like Banjo and Kazooie enough. I'd play it. If I had actually given to the Kickstarter, I would have played. And I probably will play it after it comes out. Hey, speaking of that, would you consider Psychonauts 3D platformer?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
100%.
I always get confused what counts and what doesn't. I guess because the way
Is
some.
it 3D? Do you have to jump on things without falling in holes?
Well, yeah, but I guess where my confusion comes is sometimes, you know, how the cameras work in some of them. Like the camera in Psychonauts was so weird to me, it didn't feel 3D to me a lot of the time. Maybe that's my
Yeah,
brain
there were
at.
some like on-rail camera parts,
Right.
like the Milkman level.
Yeah.
That there is no way that you could have an autonomous camera in that level, or else your brain would break.
Yeah, the Sarge level or whatever the military dude's name was, that was a little on rails too at times, and that one was an. But I always think of something like Conker or Banjo as like my idea of what a 3D platformer is. That's what I use as kind of the basis to judge. You know, because those had pretty
Well,
much.
I mean, the basis would, like, for me, I guess, would be Mario 64.
Yeah, that's true. And his camera wasn't always the best. I mean, it wasn't necessarily on rails, but it wasn't always the best. I need to find a good emulator of that and play it again. It's been a long, long time. I
It still
started.
holds up pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I've been told. That's the other reason. I've had multiple people tell me that. Okay, so on to kind of gamer dick news if we're done there. But so if you like 3D
Yeah, sure.
platformers or you
Good.
like Castlevania, hey, you're gonna be getting games. And I actually think both are still not done with Kickstarter. I don't know, I didn't look. Okay, so H1Z1 is the latest zombie survival shooter. It was made by Sony Online Gaming, and then they became Daybreak Game Company. They've had all kinds of problems. I was talking to HK the other day about how we're a pair of idiots for even buying it early on because what happened with DayZ in the early days. We've seen what, you know, you've seen what happens with online shooters in the early days, not so much on console, but a lot on PC. You know, the cheat, you got to go through the cheating and hacking phase before you get into the kind of calm down, it's fun phase. Okay, so reason I'm bringing this up is Sony banned about 25,000 accounts for cheating. And John Smedley was tweeting this the entire time. He was basically taunting the fuckers. And so I'm sitting there going, okay, Smedley, yeah, you know, I kind of still like you, so don't be a complete dick about these people you're banning. I get it, they cheated, but dude, taunting turns to trolling really easily, and then you're no better than the dudes hacking and cheating. Until a couple hours later, I had to leave, I ran to the ranch to come back, and I saw Smedley mention something. I was like, what the hell? I want your reaction to this. Basically, what he did was he took the opportunity to tell any of the cheaters who had been banned to make public YouTube apologies, and they would get their account unbanned. And his tweet with it that I had to dig back in my timeline to find was, if we ban 30K and unban 20 for making videos that are seen by a lot of people and they apologize, I'll take it. I watched like two. It ended up being five accounts last I checked, and I wasn't going to dig through his timeline to see if that was all he did. He was claiming that was all he was going to do. But I watched two of the five. I don't know if it's actually going to be a deterrent to those five guys, but watching these burly brofist dudes be all contrite and apologize was the most hilarious yet right thing to do I think I've ever seen. And I thought it was really cool on Smedley and Daybreak's part to give them the opportunity. What do you think of that? That's a new one, isn't it?
Which game is this?
H1Z1. It's a zombie survival game. It's on early access on Steam.
Okay. And that's like,
it's like DayZ.
DayZ, okay.
Essentially. A little different, but basically.
No, man, I think that's great. I mean, trolls are going to troll until they can't troll anymore, and then they cry. So.
I'm telling you, go look for H1Z1 apologies on YouTube. I don't have any links right dead in front of me in my history. This was a couple days ago. I was stunned anybody did it. You know, because part of being a troll is not having to drop the troll face. You know, we've both seen it 100 times. Part of being a troll is acting like you don't care, acting like, you know, you're not doing anything wrong. I mean, I've ran into it 100 times in survival games, you know, DayZ servers and even in H1Z1. What little I played it before I realized it was filled with cheaters and hackers. But as a concept, would you support that? And let's say it's a game you're playing. It doesn't matter what genre, it doesn't matter, you know, it had some kind of online component. And cheaters were given this opportunity. Would you be okay with it then?
Yeah, why not? I don't think I'd have a problem with it.
Yeah, I have to wonder how many of those five, or let's say 10, just to be safe, because I don't feel like looking it up. I wonder how many of them are going to get banned again.
Probably 75%.
You know, I was being pretty cynical about that too, but he warned them. If you get banned, if the ban hammer a second time, it's you're never getting back. We will make sure of that. But this is, you know, I've no doubt, considering he's a CEO, I probably said some pretty smarmy things about John Smedley, especially if he was part of any of Sony's press conferences at E3 when he was part of Sony. But overall, I've always gotten the sense that the dude's, even as a suit type, is a pretty decent guy. And this just kind of proves my point. Or, you know, at least proves it to, I shouldn't say proves my point, but proves it to me in my mind. You know, you give people an opportunity to be contrite and make amends for what they did. You know, a lot of them aren't going to care. But if you get through to the people who are actually decent people that are just, you know, being dicks because it's anonymous and they can get away with it. But I was just curious what you thought about that. Because, you know, like I said, you know, there isn't a hell of a lot going on in the run-up to E3. I mean, Unless you want to talk about The Witcher 3, which, yeah, I
It's
don't
a
want
game
to.
that, yeah. I can't say too much.
I'm getting a lot of shit from people because, I like RPGs and I don't like the Witcher franchise. And I have to listen to every day on my Steam account, "Oh, it's so great. This is so great. This effect is so great from Age of Kane." It's like, dude, I'm not playing it. And why are you bugging me anyway? There's no fucking online. There's no co-op. We can't play together. I don't think he's actually trying to rub it in. I should make that clear. It's just, it almost feels like at times he's trying to sell it to me, and it's just, there's just certain things about that franchise I just have never liked. I played through about half the first one and did not enjoy my experience, and I've watched, and that's where, watching Let's Plays and stuff like that can be helpful. If you're kind of on the fence about a game, you've heard it's made changes or the franchise has made changes. But I watched a couple streamers and a couple YouTube videos and went, no, the combat and other stuff still got the same problems I didn't like about the first one. I'm not playing it. I'm not paying $60 to be frustrated and pissed off because it's not my kind of game. I'll tell you something else, Glace, that I'm kind of sort of in your camp that, well, I don't have a ton of time for YouTube, watching YouTube. I make time for the few big time YouTubers that I like, but I'm starting to use it for games that I'll never play, but I kind of find interesting. I'm watching a guy do the Life is Strange game from Square Enix right now. And I'm actually really looking forward to the, it's episodic. I'm actually really looking forward to the fourth episode coming out. I'd never play this game in a million years. It's totally not for me. But it's been fun watching a Let's Player play it. Okay, so the only other like news story I had, and I hope this makes you laugh like it made me laugh, or at least you find it amusing. 3D Realms may reclaim the rights to Duke Nukem report. Duke Nukem 3D developer 3D Realms may be reclaiming the rights to its lost IP, according to some court documents. Previously, 3D Realms sold the Duke Nukem IP to Gearbox, who finished development on Duke Nukem Forever, then shipped it out to less than stellar reviews. I like how Eurogamer was being pretty nice to him there.
Was that in quotes?
No, that's the thing. It was not in quotes.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure Eurogamer gave it like a 3 or 4. 3D Realms was then purchased by Danish developer Interceptor, who teased a game called Duke Nukem Mass Destruction. Naturally, Gearbox wasn't having any of that, so it sued 3D Realms, who later admitted to being at fault, and the whole thing was just a misunderstanding. I saw that in the news. I don't think we talked about it on the show, though. Anyway, Interceptor claimed that it never announced the Duke Nukem game, though it strongly hinted at one, and later revealed that it was working on a PC and PS4 isometric action game called Bombshell, which many believe was an altered version of the Duke Nukem game. Bombshell's female heroine was later altered to wear something more sensible, yada yada. Now NeoGAF poster Mr. Tibbs has dug up court documents noting that 3D Realms and Interceptor have reached an agreement with Gearbox, suggesting that the former Duke Nukem IP holder will repurchase the rights to the series. Yada yada yada. Why? I laughed really way harder than I probably should have at this.
You know, I could apply to 3D Realms. It's in Dallas. Don't know if I should.
You want to work for the Danish people? I hear they pay in Legos.
That might I could resell the Legos. Legos are pretty expensive.
That is actually true, and I'm really
Legos are
hoping.
probably a better currency than US dollars right now.
And not really. Actually, the dollar's been doing pretty good. We're not taking quite the bath against the euro we have been, had been. I was also, as soon as that statement came out of my mouth, I thought, do any of my Danish friends listen to our podcast? Thinking, am I going to have to apologize?
Ask them if they deal currency in Legos in some
Yeah.
way.
Is that where 3D Realms is hiding out? I mean,
Yes.
Gearbox is in Austin, or is in Texas, too.
Yeah, Gearbox and 3D Realms are, I think, are their two big ones in Dallas.
Well, I wouldn't really consider 3D Realms that big. They
I
kind
mean,
of.
they have a lot of there's a lot of mobile developers
Oh, is
out
that what
there.
they do?
Yeah.
Is that what happens when you lose a massive franchise? And then I think it's so funny, and I'm to the point now in life where I'm not gonna drag it all up, but I seem to recall a lot of crowing from Gearbox and their CEO, who's not a favorite of mine, whose name I can't even remember, about how the Duke Nukem franchise is gonna be forever and not making a joke about the game, and we're gonna make more games, and that didn't happen.
Nope.
I don't see this going anywhere. I mean,
No.
I hope they didn't pay much for it. That was the other joke thought I had in my head.
Probably a relevant concern.
Well, I mean, honestly, whether you agree with the way Duke Nukem works or not, how many series have come back from a game that got that slaughtered?
Oh, let's see. I mean, no, I was about to say Sonic, but I mean, that still hasn't really ever come back.
No, well,
I
it's
mean, if
also.
you want to count the Sonic on the Xbox and in any game after that,
Yeah, see,
I don't know.
on PC it got a 54, but if you throw out things like Master Blaster 1 and other things that will give anybody any. Let's see. Let's go down to the guys that actually. Oh, IGN gave it a 5. There's a shocker. Giant Bomb 4, GameSpot 3, PC Gamer 3, Gaming Nexus 3. What did Eurogamer give it? I don't think they do PC. I was gonna say if Eurogamer actually gave it a good game, maybe they weren't being sarcastic. Yeah, but I don't know. Like I said, outside of it being funny news, hey, if you're a fan of Duke Nukem, 3D Realms has the has the license back, or supposedly has the license back. But I could tell listening to you that, or your lack of responses, that you were pretty much were like me, like, why?
Yeah, like I thought this was irrelevant now, It had its time and the ship has passed and gone off the edge of the earth.
Well, that was the only thing I was left to wonder. Because it was so childish and so meant for a certain mentality, let's just call it that, that really lives underground now, unless they're being man babies about women being equals or something on Twitter, then they're not so underground. But that even if the game had been good, I was always curious whether, it would do that well. Its bad reviews had nothing to do with any potential sexism or misogyny or anything like that. It had to do with the fucking game was garbage.
They shouldn't make a Duke Nukem where it's like Duke-el Nukem, so
Well,
female lead.
that Interceptor game, I remember that because they were talking about making a female lead. But are you really doing anything positive if it's just a female version of Duke? I don't,
Don't know. I mean, you just gender swap everything, and at that point, it's just the same thing.
Yeah, it's just Duke with boobs.
He should have the same voice, though.
I almost want to see a trailer for that.
There's probably a mod.
I played Duke Nukem. I just. That was just never my type of humor.
Yeah, same here.
In its time, if you like Duke Nukem, I'm not cutting on you. I'm not calling you names. I'm not calling you things that some people would on, across the internet now that we're a more understanding and sensitive crowd. No, we're not. Still a bunch of fucking cavemen beating ourselves in the head with clubs. But the jokes just didn't appeal to me. I played a couple of the first ones for a little bit and was like, yeah, okay. And I mean, in today's world, it really doesn't have any place even as a parody, per se. But let's see, what else we got going on? I don't think there was anything. I mean, that was the great thing. Kay and I could just bullshit. Last week, there really hasn't been a ton of stuff going on. You catch anything on like I'm seeing the guys in the WPO chat are really liking some of the comic book TV shows. I'm glad to see those are doing well. Not that I'm ever going to make time to watch
I've been reading some comic books, but I haven't watched a lot of TV, though.
Like, reading when you're... What do you do when you travel? Like for me, because I only have to drive, like, 15 minutes to the ranch and back, so, like I spend a lot of time these days, if it's not some goofy morning drive show, I listen to, like, a lot of sports radio, because I don't want to wait through five songs of my particular favorite genre that I don't like for one that I do like. It's not that I'm getting older. I like newer music. I just don't have the patience anymore to sit through three or four that I may like or may not like to get to the one I do like. So I just listen to sports talk radio. But what do you do when you're in a car for that long? How's it different for somebody like you?
Well, in the morning, I listen to the super crazy conservative radio stations down here because they provide me a wealth of amusement that keep me awake in the morning. but on longer car trips, like this most recent one, I either listen to music on Pandora or I have been getting into audiobooks recently. So on this last drive, I've been listening to 11/22/63 by Stephen King, which is a book about this guy who finds a time portal in the back of a diner in Maine that goes back to 1961, I think. And he uses it to go back in time to stop the JFK assassination. So.
Oh, do you like that concept?
I do, yes.
Okay, then you need to go find a Let's Play. I will recommend Jacksepticeye because he's my favorite currently, and I like his commentary. You need to go watch the Life is Strange Episode 3 video game, a Let's Play of it. Because if you like that premise, that episode has a very interesting take on time. I'm just going to say that, and you really don't...
Oh, I love anything time-related.
This is... Let's put it this way. There's not a lot of stuff games can do that's going to make me go, holy fucking shit, I did not see that coming. And it involves the whole game, and, well, Life is Strange, if you don't know, it's a little for the younger crowd. It's a little, how do I put this, angsty 18, 19-year-old stuff. But it has a very interesting thread running through it of time and how and being able to control time. Let's put it that way without spoiling it for anybody. Because it's funny because I got to think of this now because it's like I didn't play the game, but I watched somebody play it all the way through, or the first three episodes that are out. But the third episode, and of course it's going to be six episodes total, so. The episode 3 is setting up for, the grand finale. Like I said, the swerve, the kind of twist they put into it, I was like, you got to be shitting me. So is Stephen King not so much horror? Good,
yeah,
not good?
This one is interesting, yeah, because there's not really a lot of horror. I mean, there is earlier in the book, he goes back to stop, his high school janitor from being maimed when he was a kid. By his father with like a hammer, and so that gets kind of graphic at some points, but it's really not like foreboding horror. I mean, like, there's an event that's going to happen and it freaks the guy out, but it's not like, oh, and behind this corner there was this lurking in the darkness and stuff. But
oh yeah, if you like that, you do need to go make yourself. It's 2 hours. It's gonna be 2 hours because that's about how long it takes to play through that an episode. But I'm telling you, I like that kind of stuff too. It's kind of what attracted me to watching Jack play this game, even though it wouldn't be normally a game I'd sit through, especially even if I've got the time for 2 hours. If I'm editing or doing something, that I don't need audio or need to be listening to any other audio.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad I watched this set of Let's Plays, and I will watch him play all six episodes. But, yeah, I hear a lot of people gripe about King not writing when he doesn't write horror, but I've always thought he's just a really good writer. In fact,
he writes really simply, which I like. It's very direct. He sometimes gets metaphorical, but I mean, what happens is what's happening. Which is a nice relief, I think, It's reading just to read, which people forget about sometimes.
Well, what you're absolutely right, and what always impressed me too was, yes, his writing is very straight ahead. I guess simplistic would be a way to put it, but the fact that he could make some of the most suspenseful moments in a book using
Oh
the
yeah.
simplest of things.
Oh yeah.
Needful Things is probably my favorite book of his for that reason.
I mean, what I do like about King too is that all the lore behind it and how all the stories are connected. I don't want to get too into it and how they are connected, but in this past one, this guy, when he goes back in time, he ends up visiting the city where it takes place, and
I hate that
so
book.
like he's there like after the first incident has happened, so and it's like the aftermath of that, and he doesn't understand what's going on, but you the reader knows because they've read it, so.
He also does his homework as far as history itself goes.
Oh yeah, I mean, apparently he was really obsessed with the assassination. So, I mean, he has all the dates right and everything and all the events going on.
Yeah, because he got tied into a conspiracy plot that, or to a conspiracy theory that he believed that it wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald, this, that, and the other thing. And he actually had to come out and say, hey, look, I'm really fascinated by what happened, but I don't have any theories. That's
Yeah.
twice he's been connected. I just saw another one, another conspiracy theory involving him. Oh, that it was actually Stephen King who killed John Lennon. And if you go look at a picture of David Mark
I haven't heard of
Chapman,
that.
yeah, well, go look at a picture of David Mark Chapman and then bring up a picture of Stephen King, try and do them side by side in browser windows. I admit they do look more similar than I expected.
Oh yeah, back then. Oh gosh, those glasses.
Yeah.
I believe it. Gosh, I didn't think about that.
I mean, obviously it's complete bullshit because David Mark
It's
Chapman.
funny because in this book, one of the aliases he uses in the 1960s is John Lennon. So people ask him what his name is. He's like, "Oh, I'm John Lennon." Of
And they don't
course,
question.
no one knows who that is, then because he wasn't famous yet.
Oh, wait, it was 64. Ed Sullivan was 64, huh? Now I can't remember. I guess it was post Kennedy's assassination.
Yeah,
I want to say
the funerals
64.
weren't big yet, so.
Well, not here.
Yeah, not in Texas. So,
Oh, that is true. Hey, did you get a chance to go see any of that?
I had been to Dallas before and I
Oh, okay.
saw the museum then, but that museum is really interesting. I mean, because it's just weird that there's a whole museum just about that. I mean, they have a little bit about his life, in the beginning, but it's like the JFK Assassination Museum, not the JFK Museum, and the weirdest part is that in the street outside, they have like tape on the ground where both shots happened, like
Right.
with little X marks. And like during traffic, when traffic has stopped, people run out there and like stay on the X and like take pictures on the X. I'm just like, this is just like either wrong or like just is a very odd sight to see people running out there doing that.
Oh, where he got hit.
Yeah. Like, I don't know why you'd want a picture of that. Like, it's
Well,
interesting that it's there, but.
unless you're trying to prove conspiracy theory number 7,500 about that. The only thing that ever made me give any even second thought to the JFK conspiracy theories is the gun Oswald was using was a piece of crap.
Oh yeah, he bought it for like $40, and he just wrapped it in a blanket.
Well, back then you could get a
Oh
decent.
yeah, that's what's great about reading this book is that, I mean, he really goes into like how easily accessible firearms were, like domestic abuse and like how easy it was to get away with, crimes and stuff. So, and how everyone smoked all the time. He always writes that everyone was smoking. So.
Yeah, the even funnier part about it is, realistically, it wasn't that long ago. I mean,
No, it was
yes,
only maybe 60 years ago. Not even 60 years.
not
No.
even that yet. It's still in 50, what would it be, 50 something. Yeah, but well, I actually let's roll into this and maybe we'll call it a show after this. I saw a top 10 this week. From WatchMojo.com or one of those top 10 lists I keep on my YouTube channel for when I'm bored and just want something in my ear. Top 10 movies you should not watch by yourself. And they had a couple on there. Believe it or not, I would watch it by myself because I made myself watch that movie so many times. It still gets to me a little bit, but I know where every jump scare is coming. So, you know, it's like repetition kind of. Clowns still freak me out, but what is one movie, horror movie, that you would not watch by yourself?
REC.
Oh. I have not seen that yet, but I've heard about it.
Definitely scariest movie I've ever seen. And like when I recommend it to people and they watch it, they're like, yeah, that was terrifying.
I've heard of it. I've seen it in top 10 lists. I have not seen that. I'll have to watch that. The one for me, and I think I may have even said this on the show before, is The Grudge. Either version, I've seen both. The American version more because of the sound. That mm-hmm. sound that the monster or whatever you want to call it, the woman makes, just is bone chilling to me. I've tried watching that one by myself because generally that kind of stuff, even though I've accepted that I have a fear of clowns, doesn't disturb my sleep patterns all that often. I get, you know, like anybody, I get the occasional nightmare, but I'm not one of those people where I can't watch a horror movie before bed, you know?
Yeah.
The other one I need to see is Cabin in the Woods. Everybody keeps telling me to watch Cabin in the Woods, and I have not seen it yet. I've been slacking on my horror movies.
Cabin in the Woods is pretty good. That was pretty funny.
Hmm?
I like Cabin in the Woods.
Wait a minute, are we talking about the same movie? Maybe I've got the wrong name, because it was funny.
Oh, I might have spoiled something. I don't know.
Oh, wait a minute. No, you haven't spoiled anything that I haven't spoiled for myself. I'm also thinking about, there's another one, similar name, that, to me, the biggest thing about horror, and that's where King, when he doesn't write horror per se, like this book you're talking about, he still brings it over. Horror is all about the suspense. Mm-hmm. There are visual aspects like the sound or well, that's not visual, but there's visual and audio aspects that you can bring in that obviously make it even more terrifying. But some of the most terrified moments I've ever had watching a horror film is, you know, something's coming and they just keep stringing it out. And so like you get more tensed up, ready for it. And King seems to be able to write those in his books.
Yeah, I mean, this. I mean, the main event is like the JFK assassination, the day, 11/22/63, and I just got to the day, and I was listening the entire trip, so that was like 35 hours.
How do you think he translates the audiobooks? Who, by the way, who narrates them for him?
Who does narrate? Guy is okay, but I mean, I can pretty easily dissociate who's talking. I'll have to look up who does it. Only problem is like if it's a guy and there's a girl talking.
Yeah, that's always been a difficulty. Awkward. That's always been a difficulty about audiobooks. I've only heard of a few guys that do it a lot, do audiobooks, that really put an effort into changing character voices. And for the most part, I don't know if it's necessary. Yeah, it throws you out a little bit when it is a guy and it's a woman talking, but
the worst defense I've seen of that one is there's a guy that narrates the Watchmen motion comic, and like he has a really like gritty voice, you know, which is perfect for that world. But then you have the one Silk Spectre girl character,
right?
And they have like a lot of sex scenes in that book, and it just gets really, really awkward really fast because he doesn't change his voice at all.
Okay, but outside of that, how does King come across in an audiobook?
Well, he's not narrating it.
No, I know, but just his style of writing and all of that.
I mean, I think it's fine. I mean, I think it helps because it is straightforward. I mean, if you read books that are more like metaphorical and like I complicate in the word structure, like I'll find myself going back and reading paragraphs. But in Stephen King, like because what's happening is happening, I don't really find myself having to like rewind or anything. Which I probably would if I was like reading Faulkner or something, you know.
Right.
The movie plays out. I mean, the book plays out like a really, really long movie, you know. So it's okay in my head to listen to it.
But they, I guess what I'm driving at is, do they get the suspense right? That's what always concerns me about, like, more.
Oh yeah. Oh, he definitely does. Yeah. The guy who's reading it, yeah. He pauses and stuff and has like wavers in his voice when stuff gets weird, and I've been pleased with it. So yeah, I can't find it. It doesn't say who, oh, Craig Wasson. Craig, what?
Craig Lawson.
Craigwasson.
Oh, yeah, I have no clue who that is. Let's.
Oh, he was on Nightmare on Elm Street.
He was? Oh, shit, he was in Body Double, too.
Yeah.
Huh.
Who is this person?
I have probably seen him. I know I've seen Body Double, and I know I've seen Nightmare on Elm Street. Body Double, maybe. I did not see Body Double when it first came out. I can tell you from the day it, from the time frame that it came out, I can tell you that I did not see it when it was first released. But I have seen. Oh, he was in Malcolm X as a TV host. Oops. Where's the original? Oh, he was on Nightmare on Elm Street 3: Dream Warriors. I've seen that one. He was Neil Gordon in that. I bet if I watched it for about 30 seconds, I'd know him. Let's see. I think they got a still here of him. Yeah, they. Oh, okay. I remember him from Nightmare on Elm Street 3. God, it doesn't seem like those movies are that old. If 3 came out in 87, it doesn't seem like they're that old.
He was in MASH too.
Oh, you know, now looking at him. Yeah, he kind of looks familiar in another way. Huh. I guess it really doesn't matter whether they're somebody that's done traditional acting or not. It really comes down to their voice and how they read and how they phrase and do they pause at right times. If they act out voices differently for different characters, that'd be great too, but a lot of times you're not going to get that.
I mean, he does inflections, but he doesn't do a full-fledged voice.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never actually tried listening to an audiobook. Reading for me is
Yeah,
all.
I listened to All the Pretty Horses by McCarthy. That's the last one I listened to.
I don't think I've read that all the way through. I think I've read part of it. But reading for me has always been like when I relax. I mean, if I was traveling that distance anymore with as crappy as radio has become, it'd probably be more of an all, especially with how simple it is to use your smartphone with even the most basic of stereo equipment anymore. You know, because quite honestly, you could go down to Walmart and get a $100, for lack of a better term, CD player for with a USB port in it that will accept either phone. I mean, I don't know how you're doing it, but you know, there
Oh, I
are.
mean, I got it from the library, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my library has audiobooks.
Oh, that's cool.
So, I mean, that's where I've been getting all of them from, which is great because, I can rent it for 2 weeks and then I come back, and then I renew it or I turn it in. So,
Is it digital or is it CD?
it's a CD.
Oh, okay. So you just pop it in a CD
Yeah,
player.
just a CD player. And, like, you press power on the CD player and it just pauses it where you press power. So, I mean, it's.
Well, that's kind of awesome.
Yeah, it's like no sweat at all.
Do you prefer? I may have asked you this before, but since we're talking about this, and I'll ask you. Do you still prefer books, or do
Oh
you?
yeah. Oh
Yeah.
yeah.
I can't get.
I can't do a Kindle or reading on the computer because I'll get distracted and want to do something else. It's like having like a book like forces me to like only look at the book.
I'm similar. I don't think that's exactly my problem, but like I do get distracted because I usually would o I would only read them really on my tablet. But I'm immediately tempted to just start something on Netflix.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You could just get distracted and want to do something that's a faster medium,
I mean, I got my love of reading from my mother for. I would guess. I think it was kind of born into me too. But what's funny to me is, you know, My mother has taken to reading on, well, she's got a Kindle and a Nexus 10-inch tablet. She's taken to reading on that thing like, I would have never thought in a million years when we bought her that Kindle Fire that she would have taken to it. You know, that she wouldn't want books, but she reads books all the time, and she's learned, hey, I'll go look down the Amazon free book list and see if there's anything I want to read. And I'm like you, I read about 10 pages into it, and I might get 10 pages into a book, and hey, I didn't finish watching that documentary on Netflix. Hey, I didn't finish watching this on Netflix. And I'm off to Netflix. I don't even try it on the PC. YouTube is about as far as I can get on PC. And honestly, that's another reason why I like watching Let's Plays. Some of them I watch because I'm interested in a game that I don't want to play or don't have time to play. I'm interested in it for other reasons, kind of like Life is Strange. In fact, it was the whole time thing that had me interested, and it has not disappointed. But at the same time, I just like having that in the background when I'm typing or when I'm filling out stuff or when I'm doing, you know, anything that doesn't require to me to be listening to other audio, you know, like a video or a podcast or whatever. So it's kind of nice. And sometimes I want shorter stuff. You know, if I want to watch shorter stuff that's more commentary oriented, I'll watch that when I'm, well, actually, if I'm going to be doing Minecraft stuff, like if I'm going to progress in whatever bit of Minecraft I'm playing, to do a video on it, I'll watch YouTube while I'm doing that. You know, got YouTube in one monitor and in Minecraft in the other. And then I can look up stuff too if I need to. But I don't know, man. It was kind of a rambling show, but I've got enough if you're good.
Yeah, I'm good. I mean, I was all over the place, but whatever.
Yeah, it's just like our last one. At
They
least
get what
this
they pay,
time.
they get what they pay for. So.
Hey, exact. Well, for one thing, exactly, which is they pay nothing. And second, at least this time we didn't do a questionnaire that went like 20 minutes too long. That's one of the few times I've
Oh yeah,
actually.
I've been avoiding that.
That I'm glad that exists, and I'm glad we saw it through to the end. But yeah, as segments go, that one went a little too far. I like these shows though. Next week we'll be back to normal stuff with John here, and that's absolutely fine. I love that too. But these kind of one-offs and two-mans are fun as well. Speaking of that, something I do need to bring up. The Mixlr subscription, the thing we used to do live podcasting on, went. Is the free year is gone now, and I'm not paying them for another year. But here's the great thing. I need to research it a little more. I need to test it a little more. But Twitch has finally done away with the delay. You can turn the delay off on Twitch now if you want to. So what that means is it'll make Twitch an even better platform for us to do live podcasts from now on. Because one of my biggest hesitations about doing it on Twitch was the delay. Not see a question or a comment that's funny for like, you know, 45 seconds to a minute to, it sometimes can be longer depending on your internet connection. So that was concerning to me. So when John gets back and we kind of get back in the swing of things going into the summer, or at least, you know, kind of get a couple three-man shows under our belt, I'm really going to make an effort to do more live podcasts on Twitch. I'm not going to make an effort to stream. I like talking,
Oh,
but huh?
stream Connect 4 or like tic-tac-toe
That's
or
that. Well, that's the other thing to figure out. Like, I could record 2 hours of just game footage for them to look at flashing lights, you know, and then just play it on my desktop. But fuck me. That means recording 2 hours of game footage and something. That's a big goddamn file. And I'm pretty sure they're going to be bored of it after a couple episodes.
No, you play 4 games of Minesweeper, and then you just loop it.
Just loop it. Well, that is kind of the downside. I mean, you know, that if you're going to do something like a live podcast on Twitch, you know, I guess I could be playing a game, but that was a little distracting when we did it, when all of us did it with Minecraft.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a
I mean, you need to find a game that's not super active.
Yeah. I mean, I could play something like Happy Wheels or by Turbo Dismount, where it's just kind of set it up and it goes. You know what I mean? Because Happy Wheels, if you've never played that, is kind of just this. It's you'd have to see it to believe it. Maybe I will stream that the first time. I watched it. I've watched some people play it on YouTube. It's just like, Jesus Christ, what a mess. But anyway, so if you were wondering about live shows, and if you got a suggestion for what the hell we should do with the video portion, I'm all ears. But other than that, if you'd like to get in touch with us, we have a ton of ways you can do that. Facebook, we have a Facebook, it's WonderPod Online. WonderPod Online. We have a website, it's wonderpodonline.com. Wonderpodonline.com. A lot of YouTube videos these days, plus this podcast. If you want to use an embedded player so you can listen to it on a browser, I put an embedded player in every show post. So go to wonderpodonline.com for that. We are on iTunes, like everybody else. We're also on archive.org. And archive.org is the best place to get the entire catalog of everything we've done, including last week's one-off with Agent K. Although he may be back. He had a lot of fun doing the show, so he may be back at some point in the future. YouTube channels, my YouTube channel, Bruce McGee, Glacinator's YouTube channel, 36Wii YouTube channel, Olivia Made This YouTube channel, and I finally got it right, and I finally got it in my head correctly. What Chris Does, Chris Lloyd's YouTube channel. Wow, that joke only ran out of steam by May. Well, more like I ran it into the ground and kept going with it. So it's What Chris Does, and you should go check out his YouTube channel. We have a Twitter account. It's at WonderPodOnline. At WonderPodOnline. Fuck it. If none of that works for you, we have an email address. It's wonderpod@wonderpodonline.com. wonderpod@wonderpodonline.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter at ORIGIM. Until episode 254, I'm out of here. See you, people.
Goodbye.